Shasta Lake and neighboring friends, the Queen of Dragons has your back with premium products at prices that work for you. As the longest standing dispensary in the area, our local team knows exactly what you need. Our shelves are stocked with the freshest flower in town. From our premium, fresh, and local line to our budget-friendly options featuring Emerald Junkies and Tricana Boys. Don't miss our famous Flower Friday deals. Top quality at unbeatable prices. And for the green thumbs out there, clones are now in store for the growing season. Join our Dragons Reward program and earn points with every purchase. Stop by 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake or call us for delivery at 530-276-9771 or check out our menu at thequeenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons, premium offerings, unbeatable value just for you.
Hi friends, RC here with Tobacco and Brew, bringing you this month's Cigar of the Humidor. Henry Clay, Warhawk, Rebellious. Backed by popular demand, this limited edition Toro is sure to please. Another fine example of Nicaraguan tobacco blended by AJ Fernandez. Complex, smooth, chocolatey Habano wrapper, a satisfying smoke with a clean finish. Get yours today at Tobacco and Brew, Redding, California.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us.
This show's for educated voters, not for people that voted for Kamala Harris.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1468.
Now, this is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Ed Robertson inviting you to join us for the next edition of TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on KCNR. We'll play part two of our conversation with Pat Boone, plus we'll welcome Emmy Award-winning actress Louise Schaefer. Louise Schaefer, one of the stars of Ryan's Hope. That's TV Confidential, Saturday morning at 11 on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, KCNR.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Collision. Although Coachmaster is recognized as the authority and specialist in frame and suspension, we are primarily your auto body and truck collision repair center. This includes all vehicles, Lexus, Honda, or pickup trucks. Our technicians are highly trained and have the most advanced equipment to ensure a complete and quality repair. With our knowledge and the insurance claim process, all we need is your claim number to handle your claim. Coachmaster has a great working relationship with all insurance companies. This ensures a complete repair with quality parts and a delay-free process. At Coachmaster, in our 50 years in business, we've experienced almost every situation imaginable in a claim. This experience and personal dedication to the repair of your vehicle sets Coachmaster apart from all other choices. And yes, if we can't fix it, no one can.
Learn more online at CoachmasterAutoBody.com. who's in the bureaucracy. All of this really traces back to this very famous episode in the 1880s that led to a law in 1883 called the Pendleton Act. And what had happened, of course, and we're mostly familiar with this from our high school and college level history classes, is that you have the rise of the patronage system. To the victor go the spoils. You win the election and you get to put all of your people in the dog catcher, postmaster, customs collector positions. And so the federal bureaucracy, which there really wasn't one in the 19th century, but to the extent you had administration and officers in the 19th century, they were appointed by the parties. They were political in nature. And what happens over the course of the last 140 years or so is that these people are no longer put in by elected officials. They're now basically appointed through a civil service examination, civil service system. And what happens in this period where this all originates, leading to the Pendleton Act in 1883, is there are a bunch of civil service reformers who say the patronage system has sort of gotten out of hand. The party machines have gotten too powerful. They've become too corrupt. And we need to at least take certain positions out of the hands of the parties. You know, if you're a clerk in an office, you don't really need to be appointed on the basis of your loyalty and allegiance to your political party. We should just have somebody in there who's competent and who's chosen on the basis of some sort of neutral principle, like they'll do their job well. So in the early 1880s, this all comes to a head. There's an event that gives rise to this, the assassination of President Garfield. He's actually shot by a civil service office seeker, or a patronage office seeker, who thinks that he's entitled to a patronage job because he supported the party in the last election, and he actually shoots Garfield, and this leads to Garfield's death. And the country is so shocked by this excess of the patronage system that it gives a lot of momentum to the passage of the Pendleton Act. But the interesting thing that I try to explain in the book is that most people see the Pendleton Act in 1883 as the beginning of the bureaucracy and the civil service. You go back and you look at the history, it's not really what's going on. Most people are not committed to creating an administrative state in the 1880s. They just want to take some of the excesses of the patronage system out of the system. And really, that's what you see happening in the early 1880s.
The other part of the 1880s that we'll spend a majority of our time the rest of our conversation on is the creation of the Interstate Commerce Commission, which happens in 1887. What is the Interstate Commerce Commission, and what issue was it trying to address, the creation of it?
Yeah, it was the first, according to many scholars, the first major administrative agency. It was created in the late 1880s. It was basically designed to deal with problems in railroad regulation. So discriminatory rates being imposed by railroads. And so there's a real fight in the 1880s over what are we going to do about this problem of regulation? And this actually gives rise to a really important point, one that changed my whole thinking as I was writing the book. I used to think the 19th century in America was some sort of Wild West, laissez-faire, no government regulation whatsoever, period. And that's not actually the case. There's plenty of regulation happening in America in the 19th century. But everybody is concerned, or almost everybody is concerned during that century, with making sure that regulation is kept within the boundaries of constitutional government, that the regulations are made by people who are politically accountable. What happens with the case of railroad regulation is that the government wants to step in and deal with a set of problems, but nobody is in agreement about what form the government regulation should take. And the fight over the Interstate Commerce Commission is a fight by people who want a government agency or a commission to set railroad rates, to regulate what rates shippers are charging for shipping products on their railroads, versus people who say that form of government, that kind of commission-style government, is completely antithetical to the Republican principles on which this country is founded. And my argument is that although the ICC was created, the people who actually won the fight were the people who were opposed to bureaucracy, because the ICC was essentially a paper tiger for the first several decades of its existence.
Talking with Dr. Joseph Postel about his book, Bureaucracy in America, the chapter, The Beginning of Bureaucracy. If the ICC is this paper tiger, as you describe it, when do the regulatory agencies become real tigers?
Yeah, so obviously it happens over a long period of time. But if a person were to ask me, what is the birth date of the administrative state? It actually also relates to the ICC. And that date I put at 1906. There's a law that is advanced by then President Theodore Roosevelt called the Hepburn Act. And it essentially gives the ICC the power to set railroad rates. So now it is the maker of a law, the rate that you can charge to ship something on a railroad. And this was a very controversial power that was really kind of a new frontier that we were giving a legislative power to an administrative agency. So this is the first time you get rate setting power in an agency in 1906. And I don't think that's just a historical point. I think it also indicates something about the ideas and the philosophy that led to the rise of the administrative state. It was right around that time that the progressive theory of government, really advanced by somebody like a Theodore Roosevelt or a Woodrow Wilson after him, where that new theory of government, that we want the experts to be in command, we want to consolidate power rather than separate power, that's when you start to see that theory emerge. And so it's no coincidence that that's when you start to see the agencies pick up these new authorities.
Dr. Joseph Postel, Associate Professor of Politics here at Hillsdale College, and his book, Bureaucracy in America, The Administrative State's Challenge to Constitutional Democracy. Dr. Postel, thanks so much for joining us on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Great to be with you.
Up next, Lawrence Perlman joins us, his book, American Impresario. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
You're listening to What's in a Name. So this particular Michigan city's name at first look has a fairly simple origin story. It's a bit more complicated than it first seems. The name Detroit comes from a French word that means straight, like a body of water, which in turn comes from the city's positioning around the Detroit River. The river comes from Lake Erie, one of the five Great Lakes. The city still remains as one of the oldest and most important cities in the Midwest. So the name comes from French settlements in the early 18th century, which was roughly 300 years ago. The land itself has been populated for over 11,000 years by many different peoples, including the Iroquois and the Hurons. Rich in resources, it was highly contested, and after many battles, ultimately ended up within the United States, first as a territory and then as part of the state of Michigan. It has since earned the nickname of the Motor City due to its history with Henry Ford. This has been What's in a Name. My name is Megan Pidcock, and you're listening to Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Joshua Palladino, a PhD candidate at Hillsdale College. Here's master's student Theodore Madrid with a message from Thomas Jefferson on the role of the federal and state governments under the Constitution.
In a letter to Judge William Johnson, Thomas Jefferson said, "I believe the states can best govern our home concerns, the general government our foreign ones. I wish, therefore, to see maintained that wholesome distribution of powers established by the Constitution for the limitation of both, and never to see all offices transferred to Washington, where, further withdrawn from the eyes of the people, they may more secretly be bought and sold as at market."
Hillsdale College, pursuing truth, defending liberty since 1844.
Whether you've just started teaching or spent decades in the classroom, you know there's always more to learn. But where do you start? Well, here at Hillsdale College, we have the answer for you. Tried and True, a primer on sound pedagogy by Hillsdale College professor Daniel Copeland. In this little book, you'll read lessons from more than 25 years of Dr. Copeland's classroom experience. It's all distilled into 14 easy-to-read chapters on lesson planning, assignments, and classroom management, and it will help you improve your skills and inspire you as a teacher, one of our most important professions. Whether you've been in front of the classroom for years, or this is your first year, when you read Tried and True, you'll find something to help you keep improving every single day. You don't need to go at it alone. Let Dr. Copeland's real-world experience encourage you and inspire you. You can get your copy today at hillsdale.edu/true. That's hillsdale.edu/true. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Grammar Minute, where we're saving the English language 60 seconds at a time. I'm Lauren Smith, and I'm here to talk about ChatGPT. I'm a writer, both news and fiction by trade, so I'm in one of the jobs people think ChatGPT could eliminate. So, am I worried? The answer is no, and the reason is that grammar isn't everything. I know that's a weird thing for me to say, but it's true. Good grammar alone doesn't make for good writing, and even though ChatGPT has generally correct grammar and constructs pieces that wouldn't get too many marks in red pen, it's still currently unable to generate anything resembling written art. So here's the question. How can writers stay ahead of ChatGPT? The answer is, write like a human. Be expressive. Use good grammar, of course, but also go beyond the grammar into style and tone and voice. Learn to be yourself in your writing and cultivate yourself into the kind of writer people will want to read. That's your Grammar Minute.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to join us on X for updated show and guest info. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined now by Lawrence Perlman. He's the author of American Impresario, William F. Buckley Jr. and the Elements of American Character. Larry, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, thanks so much for having me.
Enjoyed reading the book. At its core, it is this great story about your relationship with William F. Buckley Jr., how you met, how it deepened, and how it ended, in fact, near the end of the book. Tell us briefly, if you would, how you and William F. Buckley became intertwined in your lives.
Scott, thanks for the question and the opportunity to talk about the book. Writing to Bill Buckley is what basically got it all going for me. I was growing up in St. Paul, Minnesota, son of Soviet Jewish immigrants who came to America with basically nothing, started their lives up, and I was a product of that incredible work ethic and always told you can do anything or meet anyone. And I was studying to be a concert pianist. I moved to New York City. I didn't have many friends. And Bill Buckley really shined brightly in my life in the 80s. We're talking about 1994 when I moved to New York. And growing up in the 80s as a Reagan kid, anti-communist kid influenced by my dad in a big way, I knew who William F. Buckley Jr. was. He was kind of a light in our house, as was National Review. And I was reading one of his books, which was called Happy Days, We're Here Again. It was a post-Bush presidency book and post-Reagan years. So he was going through his own kind of search. And in that book, I found a few articles that he had written, columns about classical music and the fact that he himself was so interested and such a good pianist and harpsichordist that he played with an orchestra and all sorts of things like that. And I suddenly thought, you know what? William F. Buckley Jr. lives here in New York City. So he is really the direct line for my parents coming to America and making it here, because that's what he did as an anti-communist warrior, having played the major role in really bringing and making Reagan a reality. And defeating communism. So long story short, I wanted to write him a thank you letter for emboldening Soviet Jews to come to America to make it here. And the thank you would be a piano recital. And incredibly, Bill Buckley wrote back and invited me to his house at 73rd and Park Avenue here in New York to play a recital. I was just 19 and walked into a world that I had never imagined, only seen in movies. An incredible masonette, as they called it, a ground floor apartment, 5,000 square feet or so, and into the Buckley world. And that was the first step, much like Charlie Bucket and, let's say, Willy Wonka. He had sent me a golden ticket, which was the start of an incredible friendship in 1995.
Talking with Larry Perlman, his new book, American Impresario, William F. Buckley Jr. and the Elements of American Character. Throughout the conversation, it gets to a point where he offers you the opportunity for a research grant to look at what happened to 10 years worth of students in New York City schools who did not have music education. You say he wanted to be a pianist. You say in the book that music and faith were at the center of his life. What was it about music that was so important to Bill Buckley that he not only embraced it himself, but wanted others to have the opportunity to embrace it?
I think that Bill saw music, and especially as he called it good music, so we would call that classical music in this instance, as one of the greatest achievements in human history. And growing up in Connecticut and in kind of remote Sharon, Connecticut, at Great Elm, the family estate with 9 siblings, they were reared on classical music. They had 5 pianos. They had required piano lessons from a tutor every week, all of them playing and practicing, and then had these listening sessions almost every day while other kids would be outside playing playing here and there. They were looking outside and listening to Mozart and Beethoven and other masters. And at first, I mean, the children would giggle and wonder why they were being put through this. But as Bill points out and pointed out in his writings, after 6 or 8 months, all of these kids were hooked. And I think what Bill was thinking about at that moment when I met him was, how could one go through life never hearing this, hearing this kind of music. And when he learned from one of his friends, Skylar Chapin, who was the Commissioner of Cultural Affairs in New York, that music education, arts education was being reintroduced in the city schools, actually for the first time in about three decades, he said, how could that possibly be? And in came my letter at that moment. So it's kind of an incredible, you know, fortuitous thing for me. Yeah, and it turned out to be fortuitous for him. So he put me out there to research this question.
Larry Perlman with us. His new book, American Impresario, William F. Buckley Jr. and the Elements of American Character. At the end of the book, there is a list of values you've identified. But we see throughout the book you referencing what you think made Bill Buckley special, what made him different. As you accept that grant and go about this study, you mentioned, you know, Bill Buckley was one who trusted fresh minds like yours. Bill Buckley was one who wanted to replicate some of the opportunities that he received. Didn't have to do things like this. And there are people out there who perhaps wouldn't have done that. What about Bill Buckley's character enabled him to be the kind of person who would find an 18-year-old who wrote him a letter and eventually make him someone who welcomed him into his home?
It was an extraordinary quality of Bill's and virtue. I think this openness, this idea that throughout his life he had mentors and he had proteges. So he always wanted to give back because he had benefited himself. I think that tied into his faith as well, but it really tied into his core values of not taking people for granted. If you took time to write a letter to him, he was going to take time to write a letter back to you. Maybe he wouldn't take on every single person. It's impossible as a protege. You know, if the right thing was presented to him, he would then connect. But he felt a responsibility to come back to a person with an answer. And when he passed away, the Yale archive received 1,100 shoeboxes of letters. In terms of the Buckley archive. So if you think about that, it made him probably one of the most prolific letter writers of the 20th century. And something was instilled in his childhood and throughout his adulthood to have that respect and not to take people for granted. So I think that friendship stood at the core of Bill. When we look at the era of friends, you know, it's quaint when we talk about connecting with people across the aisle, right, in politics. But Bill Buckley was the greatest example, I think, through his program Firing Line, through the fortnightly dinners that he had at his house on the Upper East Side, and through his general friendships. When you look at everyone from Norman Mailer to John Kenneth Galbraith, many others who he didn't see eye to eye on in terms of politics or social issues or things like that, but he found common humanity, and he was an incredible friend. And Milton Friedman was asked once what greatest quality Bill Buckley had, and he said friendship.
We'll return in just a moment and continue our conversation with Lawrence Perlman. His book, American Impresario, William F. Buckley Jr. and the Elements of American Character. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
You're listening to KCNR 96.5 FM at 1460 AM, your talk radio. Online at kcnr1460.com.
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas, but our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
Hello there, this is Kevin Cry. Every other Sunday, I will be on KCNR, your talk radio, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. I will be discussing the issues that matter to you most. You'll be able to call in directly, ask questions, and have a dialogue, open and free, every other Sunday, right here on KCNR, your talk radio.
Shasta College will host the last of three workshops titled Getting the Outside Garden Ready and Preserving What You Grow. This workshop will be held April 26th from 1 until 3 p.m. at the Shasta College Farm in the greenhouse. Workshop topics will include bed preparation for an amazing harvest, how to start composting, setting up irrigation, growing herbs, controlling weeds and bugs, canning basics. There will be a $5 charge to cover materials and seeds at each workshop. Master Gardeners are also sponsoring a plant swap after this workshop. A garden fair is also planned from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. This family-friendly event will include garden activities for children, composting demonstrations, garden-related vendors, and basic gardening advice. For questions regarding this event, contact Lemoyne Waite at 530-242-2210 or contact Shasta College.
Hi, I'm Tamara Wood, presiding judge of the Shasta County Superior Court. The Superior Court is currently accepting applications from individuals interested in serving on the Shasta County Grand Jury. To apply or to obtain further information, please visit ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
The Grand Jury is one of the most important and interesting volunteer opportunities you can be part of. Applications are now being accepted. To apply or get more details, visit ShastaCountyGrandJury.org.
Be part of the solution. Apply today.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Join Token's radio show every Tuesday night starting at 6 on 96.5 FM and AM 1460 as host Christy Matthews and Linda Kent explore the exciting world of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. Learn how Bitcoin is revolutionizing finance and grasp sound money principles. Hear new perspectives on achieving financial freedom beyond broken institutions. The future of money is here. Empower yourself with knowledge. Listen to Token's radio show with Linda and Christy Tuesday nights at 6 on KCNR.
Experience Glowing Wild, an illuminated wildlife lantern festival at the Sundial Bridge and Turtle Bay Exploration Park in Redding, California. Open select nights April 4th through June 8th, 7 to 10 p.m. Featuring 10 acres of illuminated gardens filled with Asian lanterns inspired by plants and animals from around the world. Plus food, drinks, live performances on select nights, and much more. Don't miss Turtle Bay's Glowing Wild Lantern Festival at the Sundial Bridge. Learn more at turtlebay.org.
You remember when quality mattered more and people advertised low prices? When craftsmanship wasn't just a buzzword, but a way of life. At Cascade Curations, they never forgot. Their hand-selected collections honor that American tradition and the quality you grew up with. Quality clothing and low prices, just like they used to make them. Come see their showroom of men's and women's clothing across from Jack's Grill on California Street. And as always, they have free parking for their customers. Go by and see for yourself. Cascade Curations.
This is Carl and Linda Bott. Join us on Thursday as we welcome J.B. Stacy, General Manager of the Red Bluff Roundup, and let's find out what's happening, and it's happening soon. Also joining us is Raising Shasta's Roaring Rumble Fighters. That's right, a fundraiser using local celebrities pounding on each other. Let's find out all about that on Thursday right here, Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio. Miss a day, miss a lot.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Join Aaron and Bill for We the People Radio, Sundays, noon until 2.
It's conservative talk radio with a liberal dose of humor. Get the whole story from experts around the world delivering facts rather than opinion.
Miss the show? Busy at noon? No problem. Listen to our free archives when you have time. No commercial interruptions or download restrictions. We the People Radio.
.us.
I said, you know, I really can't accept this. And he came back and he said, you know what? I'm a writer and I expect to be paid for my writing no matter what. And you are a musician and you're going to be paid modestly, even in his opinion, but you're going to be paid something for playing. So again, it comes back to mutual respect and not taking things for granted, which is an amazing quality.
Larry Perlman with us. American Impresario is his book. The value of communication, and this all starts with communication, with this letter that you wrote to Bill Buckley and his insistence that he respond to correspondence. It's a different era, and it can be difficult to do this. People want to communicate via email, but other people don't want to use email. People want to communicate via text, but that's not really personal. People rarely pick up the phone to call each other at this point. What did you learn from Bill Buckley about the importance of communication, and how did he perhaps come close to mastering the art?
I learned in spades, really. And I actually carry a lot of guilt around when I don't answer messages in a timely fashion. And of course, it was a different era, let's say in the early 90s, mid 90s, when I was really writing letters to Bill and from Bill and all those kind of things. And then, of course, email entered into the fray. But Bill was always quick. So if you emailed him, he'd email right back. And I was always fascinated. He must have had hundreds of emails in his inbox, and he was like a machine. And then, of course, with letters, he set up a system in his office. And, of course, he had assistants, but he dictated letters. He made sure that they were written. He made sure that there was an entire culture that was put around that. And I would say that that culture can continue into everything else, into text messages and all kinds of communication. But of course, today, the deluge, in a way, and also a little bit of a mirage of communication, as you were saying, that we're getting hit from so many different things. It's going back to the most important form of communication, and that is the written word in a formal context. So I feel that if someone actually wants to meet someone and try, and one of the things I want to try to inspire people to do here is to go back to writing a letter and connecting with either your mentor or a potential protege, or if someone's writing you, you never heard of, you have no connection to, take a chance. You might find an entire world in front of you that you never expected. And that's what Bill did. And I think we can really learn as a society from that kind of openness. And of course, it's become more difficult, as you pointed out, because of all these other things, but you have to come into focus. And if you FedEx a letter to someone, There's a good probability you may get a form letter. I thought I was going to get a form letter back from Bill Buckley. I never expected this entire thing to happen. So it shows it's worth the investment.
Discipline is also on the list, and you need to be disciplined to respond to communication in the way that Buckley did. Where else did you see this value of discipline make itself apparent in his life?
Yeah, in a incredible capacity for discipline. I was blown away by it. One of the examples was really going to dinner parties, and he would disappear. When it hit about 10 o'clock, he was gone. And people would look around wondering, where is he? And he had to get to bed because he would be up by 5, And he had this incredibly rigorous regimen where, you know, he was writing three columns a week. He had firing line. Even when he retired from that, he was still writing columns and writing books and doing speaking engagements and all sorts of things. That discipline was something that inspired me very much. And when I sometimes look and think, oh, you know, I'm getting a little tired from something, or I have too many things going on, I always think back to Bill Buckley when he was my age and what he was doing, and I have absolutely nothing to complain about. So that discipline of being up at 5 and then going to sleep at 10, making sure that you were going to do that the majority of the time, that also shows that he respected the value of time and didn't want to waste it.
You dreamed when you were young of being a concert pianist. That didn't quite happen, although you still were a pianist for William F. Buckley, for his friends, and were still involved in that area for a long time. The reality of what your life became, how would you compare to what perhaps you dreamed it might be when you were young?
Well, in many ways, and not to sound too, predictable on this, but in a way, I've been very fortunate to be living the dream in some ways. And it's really the person responsible for that in a big part, in addition to my parents, really, who were the first people to really invest in everything, was Bill. He was always a positive light of reinforcement for me for projects. And I had this vision to start a cable network, actually, for classical music 25 years ago, and to do it with Carnegie Hall and these kind of things. And Bill said, why not? That's such a great idea, and really kept asking me about it. And this would ultimately become a reality years later through Carnegie Hall Plus, which I'm very involved with as a co-founder and consultant. And the fact that I've been able to do that, working in classical music to broaden its appeal, to broaden everything from its presence in the media landscape and working with great artists, all of these things became possible because Bill Buckley gave me the confidence. His belief in me, he being there as a friend, as a mentor, made it possible for me to work with anyone and to contact anyone. I never had doubts about my ability to, let's say, interact with people because Bill plopped me down into his universe in my early 20s, and that was my training ground. These dinner parties were really my training ground before business school and throughout that. So I'm eternally thankful to him for that, because it was the greatest mentorship that I could have had.
Lawrence Perlman's new book is American Impresario, William F. Buckley, Jr., and the Elements of American Character. Lawrence, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks, Scott.
Up next, Dr. Michael Trepeppi from Hillsdale's Physics Department tells us about experimenting with infrared light. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Shasta Lake and neighboring friends, the Queen of Dragons has your back with premium products at prices that work for you. As the longest-standing dispensary in the area, our local team knows exactly what you need. Our shelves are stocked with the freshest flower in town. From our premium, fresh, and local line to our budget-friendly options featuring Emerald Junkies and Tricana Boys. Don't miss our famous Flower Friday deals. Top quality at unbeatable prices. And for the green thumbs out there, clones are now in store for the growing season. Join our Dragons Reward program and earn points with every purchase. Stop by 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, or call us for delivery at 530-276-9771. Or check out our menu at thequeenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons. Premium offerings. Unbeatable value just for you.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time,
give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertrand. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu. Find older episodes of this show, plus other great Hillsdale College audio programs. We're joined by Dr. Michael Trepepi. He is Assistant Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Trepepi, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
We're talking today about a lecture you gave last term, why experiment with infrared light? And so part of this will be an introduction, I assume, for our listeners on what exactly is infrared light and then what we can learn by experimenting with it. So we'll start with well, it's all education, I suppose, but what is infrared light? What's the nature of the light? How does it differ from the visible light on the electromagnetic spectrum?
Yeah, so as the name might suggest, infrared light is light that is below the color red. So if we think of the electromagnetic spectrum as being kind of a set of frequencies for electromagnetic radiation, you have frequencies associated with visible light, and blue light has higher frequencies than red light, and then so infrared light is going to be that light that has a lower frequency than red light, or higher wavelength. And I apologize right now if I switch between the two interchangeably. That's that just comes with the field.
Sure.
But if you want a number, and here I'm going to make the switch already, is its wavelength is between 750 nanometers and 1 millimeter. Mm. So it's not quite as long of a wavelength as radio or even microwaves. The way it differs is just you know, it's the same kind of radiation, but really what makes it different, at least for our experience, is how it interacts with matter. Mm-hmm. And phenomena. So light, because it has a different frequency, will interact with materials differently than infrared light, than radio, than microwave. So that's really what distinguishes all the different parts of the electromagnetic spectrum.
What can produce infrared light, and what's special about the light that's emitted from a laser versus, say, other sources?
Yeah, so you can produce infrared with LEDs. Mm-hmm. You can obviously produce them with lasers. And actually, anything with a temperature produces infrared light. Hmm. So, and this is called black body radiation. So you might have heard the term of something being red hot or
yes,
white hot. That is black body radiation. So that is because that object has a temperature, it produces, it emits electromagnetic radiation across the spectrum. And for something that's red hot, the temperature is high enough that radiation peaks for red light. So the cooler an object is, the lower that peak radiation is. So you and me, or anything in this room, is actually, if we could see it, is emitting infrared light.
what are some of the practical applications of infrared light in fields like science, medicine, industry? And we'll perhaps drill down on some of these in a moment, but how can infrared light be used?
Yeah. So, I mean, in a lot of different ways. We can think of like all the different ways that other parts of the electromagnetic spectrum can be used for just visible light or radio X-rays, and that there's just a variety of uses, right? Each of these different, because each of these different parts of the spectrum interacts with matter differently, it allows us to, either see into objects differently or, control or machine, materials differently. So it's, the uses are kind of, a little bit all over the place, with it.
Talking with Dr. Michael Trepepi from Hillsdale College about experimenting with infrared light. Can we use infrared light, to study celestial bodies, distant objects, space?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, the James Webb Telescope, which has been on the news a lot lately, is an infrared telescope. So, you know, whereas Hubble and some of the other telescopes out in orbit look at the visible or X-ray or even gamma rays coming at us, the James Webb looks specifically at infrared, and that has its advantages because it allows us to look at objects that are colder, further away from us, and also lets us see through kind of the dust clouds that can be in the galaxy and that. So,
all right, what about communication technologies, remote controls, fiber optics? How is infrared light used there?
Yeah, so a lot of the inexpensive remotes in that will use like a infrared LED to send a light signal to a receiver, whether it be on like your TV or some other device. And mainly that's done just because it's cheap and you can, LEDs cost almost nothing nowadays. And it's a lot less distracting than if you were to use visible light for the same task. So you can, in fact, see it depending on the kind of phone that you have. So if you've got kind of an Android phone, I've had students, I don't own an Apple, but I've had students try to do this with their Apple phones, and they have a hard time. If you point the camera at the little, the bulb at the end of the remote, and you have the camera app on and you press a button on the remote, you can see the LED light up and that. So your phone is just sensitive enough to that frequency. Now, fiber optics for infrared, that is all done with infrared signals in that. And so it's the reason for that being is the properties of glass in the infrared. Glass is very good at transmitting infrared light. You might imagine, right, on a nice sunny day, you can feel all of that heat coming through the window from the sun. And then also, too, it doesn't disperse the infrared light like it does other colors. So that allows you to keep those signals nice and together so that they don't degrade over the distances that you need for fiber optics.
Dr. Michael Trepepi is with us, assistant professor of physics at Hillsdale College. We talk about all these potential applications. So why do we experiment with infrared light? What kind of experiments are you conducting? What data are you trying to find?
Yeah, so why infrared light? Again, because of its just location on the electromagnetic spectrum. It's, for one thing, we can actually get nice light sources from it. So when you're working with lasers, a lot of times you're constrained to what you can actually, the frequency, I should say, of the laser that you can get. So infrared is a very nice range to use. Now, my experiments, we use pulsed infrared lasers and try to study the interaction of light with different materials. And kind of one experiment we do is we send these infrared pulses through kind of this crystalline sample, and it will double the frequency of that light. And so it's called second harmonic generation. And it's kind of a very cool phenomena because you can have basically the light, you can't see it going into the material, but then when it frequency doubles, it becomes green. So you'll just see kind of this green light being emitted by this sample. And it's kind of like, this is weird. Where is this coming from? So and that's an advantage of using, infrared light as opposed to visible light. Because if you were to do that with like a red laser or even a green laser, you know, now if you do second harmonic generation, the light might be blue or even ultraviolet, and it can be difficult to have that light propagate through air. Ultraviolet light, as much as we are still, you know, warned about, you know, UV rays coming through the, coming from the sun, and that is something to be covering up in the daytime, the air actually does a pretty good job of absorbing UV rays. So it's nice to have green light come out because that doesn't get absorbed as much just by ambient atmosphere. So.
And then do the students enjoy working with infrared light? Do you work with them at all?
Yeah, no, I have, just this past summer had, some students work, in my lab and that, and, they enjoy it. It's, not what they expect, right? They think laser lab, and so they think exactly from the movie that the laser is just this glowing beam kind of shining across the table. So it's a little bit of an adjustment for them, but once they start kind of seeing the visuals, you know, pulling out their phone and they can kind of see that the light is there, they start to get excited about it. So
Dr. Michael Trepeppi, Assistant Professor of Physics here at Hillsdale College, as we talk about why experiment with infrared light. Dr. Trepeppi, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thank you.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Dr. Joe Postel from Hillsdale's Politics Department, Lawrence Perlman, his book American Impresario, and Dr. Michael Trepeppi. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended interviews of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Court is in session with Letter of the Law on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. My name is Megan Pidcock, and today we will be traveling to Missouri, where bear wrestling is illegal. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, as I'm sure that was on your to-do list. However, it has been banned to participate in, advertise, or arrange any bear wrestling matches in the state since 1994. Bear wrestling actually has a long history in the United States. Starting in the 1800s in Europe, bear wrestling eventually made its way to American oddity shows and traveling circuses, like P.T. Barnum or the Ringling Brothers. 1877 marked the first year in the U.S. where wrestling bears became noticeably more popular. Anyone from audience members to real wrestlers started to participate in these events, and theaters and other shows began to host matches on the side to make money and draw a crowd. Rather than fading out, the phenomena grew, with headlines in the 1930s and on about celebrities or other famous people traveling to face bears. The sport spread to California and the Midwest, and reached its peak in the 1960s and 70s in the South. Concerns about animal cruelty were brought to light, as the bears were often kept in terrible living conditions and treated with little respect, in addition to the danger it posed to humans themselves. In fact, because of its widespread history and attraction, Missouri is not the only state to ban bear wrestling. Alabama, Louisiana, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and other states all have regulations and laws surrounding it. By the late 90s, bear wrestling became an activity generally outlawed in the states it had been most popular in. So, if you see a poster advertising the chance to wrestle a bear, walk the other way. This has been Megan Pidcock on Letter of the Law. If you want to hear more of Letter of the Law or other student shows like this, go to RadioFreeHillsdale.com. Once again, you're listening to Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Mary, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is President of Hillsdale College, Dr. Larry Arne, on the separation of church and state.
America's founders believed in a separation of church and state, in that the country was not to have an official religion or an official sect. But that did not mean that government was to be hostile to religion, or even indifferent to religion, as many today argue. In fact, America's founding document, the Declaration of Independence, includes both a reference to God as the author of the laws of nature and a confident assertion that human beings are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights. Far from being hostile or indifferent to religion, America's founders understood the theology of the Declaration to be an essential part of the education of citizens.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To receive a free pocket Constitution and Declaration, go to Constitution.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.